the gate!
All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers? What the fuck buddies? What the fucking ears? What the fuckadelics? What the fuck nicks? What's happening? It's me, Mark Maron. This is my podcast, WTF. As you're hearing this, I'm home. As I'm recording it, I'm not. And there may have been even 2 days in between me saying what's coming out of my mouth and you hearing it. So I'm not going to pretend to know what's going to happen. I'm just going to, and I've got two guests on the show, so I might just temper it a little bit because who the hell knows? Everything could be on fire by the time this goes up. We can only hope not. Also, I would like you to, I hope you're all taking care of yourself. Would that, could you do that for me? Don't, you know, don't stress eat. Don't fear eat. Don't eat out of existential terror. Don't treat yourself shitty. Don't relapse on alcohol. Don't do more drugs. Stay focused. We got a long slog ahead of us, and it'd be good to take care of yourself. Let's not assume that we're just going to throw it all in the garbage. Let's like, I guess I'm talking to myself out loud. I've had to make tremendous concessions in the meat department. I'm just trying to see if I can get my fucking cholesterol down. I'm in Kauai. It's my last couple of days here. It's been amazing. I looked at Waimea Canyon. I'll tell you the kind of traveler I am. That's one of my favorite places to go on this island, is to go up to Waimea. And did I tell you Steve Jones from the Sex Pistols is on the show? Did I mention that? I probably did not. Also, I got Jed Mayhew from the Zigzags, who's a neighborhood kid, stopped by. He's got a new thing I'll tell you about in a second. So anyways, the drive from where we are to Waimea is no small trek. And the payoff is spectacular. It really, you know, I always save it for towards the end of the vacation because the red dirt and the depth and the beauty and the green smatterings and the waterfall and the clouds and all of it going out to the ocean, the entire expanse of it is spectacular. And you drive right up to a lookout. You don't have to get into a helicopter. You don't have to do a major hike. You just have to get out of your car and walk up there. And it's the best. It's one of the most beautiful things in the world. So we got out and it was cloudy. We had a little rain last night, I'll be honest with you. But we spent an hour and a half driving up there. And before we left, Sarah said, you know, it's probably going to be all cloudy up there. Probably not going to be able to see anything. I'm like, no, it won't. It's going to be fine. Shit just blows over. So we drive an hour and a half up there. I don't want to see my favorite thing. And it was covered in clouds. You just went up to the lookout and you looked out and you just, it was like you were looking into a cloud. Nothing. And it was drizzling out and a little chilly. Had not brought the proper attire. And I was quietly furious. I thought I was containing it and because I was disappointed. So we got in the car and I said, let's hang out. Let's just wait it out. And we waited like 15 minutes, nothing. And then I got snotty and, you know, I said, so I guess you were right. Are you trying to prove to me that you were right, that it was going to be cloudy? Like, why do I got to be a dick sometimes? Why do vacations bring out the dick in us? I guess it's just a matter of time spent. I don't know what, maybe I'm a dick more than I assume that I am. But we did wait it out, and I wouldn't call it pouting. I would call it active waiting. Some of it was pleasant. You know, once I got through my little fucking, childlike temper tantrum over nothing, it looked like it was breaking up a little bit, and I walked back up there by myself, again, not pouting, taking a little space. Sarah waited in the car. She had gone out to take her space. We're doing that, taking timeouts. Great, it's healthy. And I went back up there, and it was like the clouds started dissipating, and it was like unfolding. It was like it was appearing. It was almost like a magic trick. It was like the mist was sort of, you know, going away and exposing this miraculous canyon. Then a rainbow formed over it, and I was ecstatic because it was beautiful, and it wasn't cloudy up there all day. It was totally worth the trip. She was excited. I was excited. I shot a what I think might be a major motion picture on my phone. Basically, it's just about a woman looking at a canyon. and her name's Sarah. I'm just going to call it Sarah in the Canyon. Hour and a half for that on my phone. But you know what? Phones now go right into the theater. All right, so let's get back to the garage. Again, what you're hearing right now in your ears, I said a couple days ago. So I don't know where you're at. I don't know where the country's at. I don't know where the world's at. I know I was just at an Indian restaurant in Kauai, Hawaii. That's what I know for a fact. But this dude that I'm about to talk to, the Zigzags, they're a band. They live in my neighborhood. They're releasing a new single as a download and on vinyl. It's called Ripping Death with the B-side Riddle of Steel. And you can pre-order it now at famousclass.com. So Jed, he reaches out to me, tells me about this. I got their records. They did a song with Iggy Pop. They were pretty punk, pretty hard. Now they seem to be drifting a little into metal-y land, which is fine. But Jed used to work at Town Pizza, and I had a feud with Town Pizza because I'm an asshole. It's a good pizza place right down the street from me, but I decided when they first opened they needed to work on their crust, and I didn't think they were, so I baited them, and I tweeted at them a picture of New York pizza. It was scandalous. And now their pizza is tremendous. And I felt bad, and I think I might have permanently pissed off one of the owners. I don't know, but I do recommend Town Pizza. It's one of the only places you get a fresh slice, you know, like all the time. Right down the street, Highland Park, Town Pizza. I'm just putting that out there, trying to make good. I'll talk to Jed about it. But this is me and Jed Mayhew of the Zigzags in the garage. Every now and then, there's a decision that's a no-brainer, and I can tell you from experience, it was a no-brainer to use Stamps.com when we started using it 11 years ago. Crazy. 11 years ago. Now, more than a decade later, Stamps.com is better than ever. The Stamps.com mobile app is like having a post office in your pocket wherever you are. You can take care of things on the go, like mailing checks, sending invoices, legal documents, and more. Easily schedule package pickups through your Stamps.com dashboard. And when you need to take care of shipping, all you need is a computer and printer. Stamps.com even sends you a free scale. Make the same no-brainer decision that over 1 million other businesses have with Stamps.com. Sign up with the promo code WTF for a special offer that includes a 4-week trial plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. Just go to Stamps.com, click on the microphone at the top of the page, and enter code WTF. The first time I met you, the Zigzags, I met you before.
Yeah.
But it was you were at the pizza place.
Yeah, I was at Town.
You're working at Town.
I was working at Town.
I was persona non grata for a while.
No, I got a good story about that.
Oh, please, because, like, let me tell you something, man. Like, I felt shitty about it.
I know.
And then, you know, the dude, one of the owners.
Yeah, Joram.
Joram?
Joram, yeah.
Joram, like, I had done I had said my piece about the crust, and then they did not really fix the crust in my mind. And it was, you know, coming from New York, I was upset about it, kind of. But, you know, pizza's pizza, and people seem to be enjoying it, and there was part of me that thought people were being misled. This pizza crust needs to be better, and they have it within their power to do it. They're already doing well. And I made a comment on Twitter where I did you see the tweet?
Oh, yeah, later. But that's the whole story, though.
But so then I see Joram,
yeah,
who I'd met, and like I like local business. I'm happy everyone's happy in the neighborhood. But I ran into him at Cafe de Leche, and he just gave me a stink eye that was like, you're dead to me.
Well, you got to understand, when you're going in and you got all your stuff in a business, he's having a kid. His whole life is riding on this thing. He's got so much anxiety already from just opening the business.
I know. Okay. I thought, but then I corrected it.
I know, but I was in there. So this is the thing. I was like the morning prep guy.
Right.
So I would come in before everyone else and prep all the ingredients.
Yeah.
And then cook all the pizzas and get them ready for the service when the doors open for lunch. But I would always listen to WTF as I'm alone in this room making pizzas every morning.
Yeah.
And one day he comes in. It had happened the night before. I wasn't aware of it. You know.
Tweet.
Yeah, and I'm hungover and I'm making pizzas. And he's just like, turn that shit off. I'm like, what? What are you talking about? He's like, I can't listen to that right now. I can't deal with it. You know, I can't listen.
Oh, man.
It's like, I got to listen to something.
But then what happened was I revisited and I made a positive comment in the LA Times.
Yes.
And I think it's okay now.
I think it's fine. And I got to say, you know, I've been there myself. Anyone who knows me knows that I've made a lot of those kinds of apologies too. So,
but the pizza's fine.
It's fine. They're doing good.
Yeah, they're doing good.
They're busy.
But you used to be the guy out back smoking the cigarette, right?
One of them, yeah.
And I always felt like I remember that. I used to like standing out back with the restaurant I worked at smoking the cigarette.
You got to.
Yeah.
That's what you look forward to.
Yeah. You get that 5 minutes, smoke the cigarette, and then you go back to the dough.
Yeah. And then when you're done, you and the rest of the people that work there, they go down to Johnny's, and then some weird shit happens, and then it's real uncomfortable the next day at work.
That's where it goes. That's where it
happens. The restaurant life.
Well, I quit drinking, so that part of it.
Yeah.
I'm out of the loop. But the Zigzags, now you guys are on your third record?
Well, we're on the second full-length album that came out in May on a label here that's actually out at Eagle Rock called Castle Face Records. But this single that's coming out that we're talking about today comes out next month on a label called Famous Class, which is out in New York.
You say your name's Cajun?
The last name, yeah. Well, I guess the first name Jed could be considered.
Jed Mayhew?
Yeah, Jedediah J. Mayhew.
Yeah, that's not Southern at all.
No, not at all.
Did you grow up down there?
My dad's from New Orleans.
Yeah.
And I grew up in when he got out of the army.
Yeah.
He was stationed. He was came back and ended up in Portland, Oregon.
Really?
Yeah.
So you're like an actual Portland kid?
I'm born in Portland, Oregon, Clackamas, Oregon, which is
Clackamas,
the shithole right outside of Portland. But I don't know if you ever know that. You know that band Dead Moon?
Uh-uh.
I got a hippie to Dead Moon. That's like my favorite. My favorite band of all time happens to be from the same unknown shitty town that I'm from.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, Clackamas, Oregon.
What label are they on?
They're on their own record label, Tombstone Records. They're like they're a couple. The guy was
what is it? Dead Moon?
Yeah. Fred Cole, who is the singer, started out as a like teen idol in the 60s down here.
Really?
Doing like blue-eyed soul.
Uh-huh.
And now him and his wife still troll around, play music. They're playing in Berlin the night before we get there. And they're like in their late 60s. And they're like the rawest, rockin'est fuck. They record their albums themselves and cut the lathe themselves on the lathe that they cut Louie Louie on.
Really?
She bought the lathe for him for his birthday, like, you know, 20 years ago.
So they do small batches.
Yeah, small batches.
Artisanal batches of vinyl.
And they
vinyl.
All sound, every record sounds different, too, because he's in there, you know, cutting the lathe, you know, smoking cigarettes and drinking whiskey, you know.
That's insane.
Yeah, I got to get you some of that stuff.
So growing up in Portland before it got hip, was that like...
Oh, it was a shithole.
Right, it wasn't like it, but it was it. Was there at least some original colonizers up there? Was it a hippie hole? Was it like growing up in like Humboldt or Bolinas?
Well, that's why they ended up there, because they were trying to. He was kind of trying to get out of the draft, and he went on tour with his band, and he met her up there. And I think, you know, that's kind of where my parents met through Scientology up there.
So, yeah,
you know,
they did they
were,
stay in?
No. That's they got out immediately, but
but they met.
Yeah, that's I think a couple
of lost people.
I think there were a lot of seekers, you know, at the time up there.
Right,
you know?
Sure, yeah. That's hilarious.
Trying to get out of Babylon, you know.
The early version.
Uh-huh.
Like, yeah, L. Ron was probably making the rounds himself then.
He might have been, you know, he might have had the boat docked over there.
Yeah, maybe. That's wild, dude.
Yeah.
So, like, it seems to me that this new single is it my imagination, or is it actually heavier metal than the last couple?
It's getting heavier by the day.
It is, right?
Yeah, I think so. We're getting faster. We're getting heavier.
Because I'm like, I was thinking when I heard it, like the B-side, what's that one called?
Riddle of Steel.
Riddle of Steel. I'm thinking like, this is Maiden.
Yeah, we just shot a video for it in a vintage arcade over in Glendale.
Really?
Yeah.
It's a little Maiden-y, isn't it?
It's totally Maiden-y.
Yeah,
for sure.
I'm so glad I was able to call that.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Being married to a metalhead for a few years, the one thing I knew was Maiden.
Well, you know, that's the thing is, so like, it's in true Zigzags fashion, it's like the first song, the A-side is all about like, you know, war in the Middle East and, you know, all the shit going on. And then the B-side is about Conan the Barbarian. So.
There you go. Relevant and mythological.
Exactly.
But yeah, but I noticed right away that like it's like you guys are going full metal.
Yeah, for sure.
Because before it was sort of like, all right, this is psych rock.
Yeah.
And now we're heading into another zone.
Exactly.
Now, let's talk about that single you sent me a while back, the Iggy Pop thing.
Right.
How did that happen?
Well,
what was that song?
That was a cover of Betty Davis.
Oh, right.
If I'm in luck, I might just get picked up.
Yeah.
And I think at the time, this is what I heard, is that Iggy was scheduled to do something with Light in the Attic Records.
Yep.
And it fell through.
Yeah.
And he owed him a favor. He'd been paid already, you know?
Oh, really? So, I wonder what he was going to do with them. Were they going to do a new record?
Well, they were doing these things where they were taking like new bands and older artists and putting them together and having them do like a cover song.
Oh, okay.
And so whatever originally he was supposed to do kind of fell through. And then they asked us to do that thing with him. And of course, we were just like fucking totally honored to
sure,
do
man.
It, you know?
Yeah.
So we recorded the music here and then sent it down to Miami and he did the vocals there.
Oh, you didn't get to
no.
hang out?
Nah.
You just
That's
got
an ass out. No.
I guess he can just do that. Just show up with that voice.
Yeah.
So what kind of guitar are you playing, dude?
I'm playing two now. I got a Jackson Dinky.
Really?
Yeah.
Like a weird shaped one?
No, it looks like a Super Strat, they call it, you know? It
was a new one?
It's from like 10 years ago or something like that. It's just like a pointy Strat. And then I play a Charvel, which was like the kind of original, like what like Eddie Van Halen used to play.
Yeah, and what's the amp?
The amp is an old, this is a good one. The amp is an old Music Man from the 70s.
Yeah, yeah.
And the guy I got that thing off of, I saw it on Craigslist. He wanted like $200 for it. It was new old, like he had bought it on layaway for his punk band in Detroit. Moved out here in 1978, got a job doing sound on commercials, put the amp in the fucking closet, never looked at it again. And then when I needed it retubed, I found, this is the great thing about living in LA or Southern California, when I needed it retubed, they're like, oh, well, I go down to Jack over here at Future Music.
Oh,
I
Jack.
Go, yeah, I'm like, hey, who? He's like, no one wants to work on those fucking things. He's like, I know the guy that used to work at the factory.
Right.
Who built these amps.
Yeah.
Here's his number. So I go down to Garden Grove. There's like this fucking, you know, morbidly obese guy surrounded with, you
tubes.
Know, tubes, you know, and resistors and wire and shit, you know. He's like, oh, I remember this amp. I built three of these for Clapton on his 78 tour. I'm like, well, there you go.
L.A., man.
Yeah, only in L.A.
Yeah, he sent me over to some dude's house to get my guitar worked on. Wasn't the guy that used to play with Dio or somebody?
Yeah, yeah. Fuck, I can't remember.
In La Cañada?
Yes, yes. I know exactly who you're talking about. He
was it Dio or
was it Dokken? Yeah, Dokken. George Lynch's guy. He played with those guys over there.
He's a nice guy.
Yeah.
And, you know, he was in the house. You go into the back, into the garage area. There's reptiles.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And just, there's always reptiles.
And just stacks of old amps and shit.
Yeah.
And a workbench and some guitars.
Totally.
Things half apart.
The monitor lizard.
Yeah, he had some sort of lizards in there.
Yeah, and ferrets.
Yeah.
There's always guys with ferrets.
Yeah, oh yeah. They're just like, what are you doing, man? Yeah. But there's always that moment where they got a guitar and, you know, they're playing through your amp.
Oh yeah.
And they're like, sounds pretty good. I'm like, yeah, it does sound good. And
yeah, when you're playing
you,
it.
Well, then they hand you the guitar and like, I can play okay. But then you have that back and forth cockfight, which is always one round with me. You know, I'll do my dinky blues riffs. Then he takes it back and his fingers are going in areas. I don't even know how he's doing it.
You're like, how'd you get reverb? Like it doesn't even have reverb.
What are you doing? No, it's just it's a technique. Fuck yeah. But he's a good guy. And that Future Music is sort of like, it's classic, man.
Oh, it's the hub. We got our drum set from there, and it was this total thing where it was just like, you know, it was like a consignment deal, you know, but Jack's just like, all right, just take it.
Yeah.
Pay me later. Yeah. I'll talk to the guy.
Yeah.
It's just like, you need those fucking people, man, when you're just like.
Right. And that's the way it used to be.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. He's like, we can pay card or, you know, if you give me cash, or, you know.
Like you needed the go-between.
Totally.
The guy that was sort of like, you know, that he was the hub of like people with different sorts of, you know, kind of pieces of equipment or
for sure.
in trouble.
Yeah.
And needed to move shit.
He just lets me take stuff and like try it out and bring it back, you know? It's like,
it's good.
It's not, it's, yeah. It's
and
different.
It's good because now that this area has become such a music hub.
Yeah.
Because what, Dwyer's here, you guys are here, Ty's here. Is Kyle still here?
Kyle's here, yeah.
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 King
all
Tough.
Yep. All those guys. I don't know where Michael Cronin is somewhere, but he's with Ty.
I think he's on the other side.
Yeah. He's somewhere around here.
I think he's here.
Yeah.
And then the guy who does Austin, you know, Austin Hooks?
No.
This is a little highbrow. We're getting a little out
okay.
of the gutter.
No, I know.
We're getting a little out of the psych.
I like to keep it dumb, so, you know.
We're getting a little out of the psych rock world into Austin Hooks, who guts these old projector heads.
Okay, cool.
And he makes cabinets for Dawes.
Oh, nice. Yeah, I was just hanging out with one of the guys from Dawes last night.
Yeah, and Blake Mills.
Okay, yeah.
He's Blake Mills' amp guy.
Gotcha.
So he's a real, like, analog nerd.
Sure, sure, sure.
And I don't know if he knows I still have this thing. Like, this was the prototype, and he said, just keep it here because I don't want to sell it.
Right.
And I'm like, all right.
Yeah.
I don't even know how to work it, really. But
I got a couple of those things,
I'm holding it for him.
Yeah.
All right, dude. So the single, how's it work now? So you're gonna put it out on vinyl, and I saw the cover art.
Yep.
It's what is it? Someone ripping apart.
It's like our version of Eddie, like Iron Maiden's Eddie. We have Randy.
Okay.
Who was my babysitter when I lived in the trailer park in Clackamas. It was like this redheaded mullet guy who would like take me down to like this place called High Rocks, which was like he jumped into the river and they would all smoke dope. And these girls would come down and I'd be like,
what's going on? This is grown-up land.
Yeah. So Randy was my babysitter. So when I needed a mascot, named him Randy. He's our version of Eddie. He's a skull-faced Hesher, you know, loser, whatever. So the image is him with a Jackson guitar with saw blades on it sawing through Donald Trump's face.
There you go. Political action.
And the record comes on spray orange tan colored vinyl.
There you go.
Yeah.
You're doing something. That ought to do it.
I don't know.
That's going to save us.
Yeah.
Jed, I think exactly. you really struck a blow.
Yeah. And so really went out on a limb there, you know. It was either that or play the inauguration. So.
Oh, yeah. You turned that down.
Yeah, good. We turned that down immediately.
Where can they get it?
You're going to be able to get it on famousclass.com. The pre-orders are going to go up like whenever this is airing. So, and we're doing like a record release show at the Resident downtown here on February 16th, and we'll have the records with us then.
Oh, so we just promote everything. How's the European tour? You want me to, let's push that.
Yeah, that starts March 1st.
Yeah.
We get into Berlin, and I think the first show is in Würzburg.
Yeah.
Which the last time we played there was at a 500-year-old women's prison.
Really?
Yeah.
Still working?
No, it's a club now.
Oh, okay. I didn't know if they split it up.
Well, like, yeah, they wheel them out in cages while you play, you know.
I thought it might be like some sort of work program.
It's witches.
Yeah. Oh, man. And then where do you go? You go to Germany and...
We go all over Germany. We go to France. We go to Italy. We go to Austria. We go to Sweden. We go to the UK. We're going to Dublin, Ireland, which I'm really excited about.
I love Dublin.
About.
Where are you playing there?
I don't even know.
Oh.
I'm excited.
Dublin's great.
I've never been there. I'm excited to
go. It's great.
Yeah.
It's a great city.
Yeah.
Pretty.
And I can imagine, people. You know.
And how's your following in the Europe?
We've been over there once, and it was it did pretty good. We played like some festivals and stuff, and we played a lot of small like club shows. And then, you know, but it's like some kid drove like 5 hours from another country to see you, and it's just like, it's amazing, you know?
So, all right. So, well, if people don't know you, let's lay into this track now. I don't usually set up tracks.
No?
No. Can we play the B-side?
Yeah, you can play whatever you want.
What's the name of the song again?
Riddle of Steel.
All right, thanks for talking, Jed. This is Zigzag's Riddle of Steel.
Thanks for having me, Mark.
There was a time, boy, when I searched for steel. And steel meant more than even gold or jewels.
A riddle of steel.
Yes. You know what it is, don't you, boy? Shall I tell you?
Do the riddle of the steel.
What you're hearing right now is Riddle of Steel, the B-side on the Ripping Death single by the Zigzags. It's available February 24th. You can pre-order it now from Famous Class Records at famousclass.com. They're donating a portion of sales to Planned Parenthood. You can also check the Zigzags out at zigzags.bandcamp.com. He's a good guy. He's a good. He used to work down at the pizza place over there. Okay? All right. So let's talk to a Sex Pistol. You know, I'll be honest with you. And this is between us. I've had a couple opportunities to talk to John Lydon, and I just didn't. But Steve Jones, I was happy to talk to Steve Jones. I've done Steve Jones' show. He's got Jones's Jukebox out here in Los Angeles. And he's got this new memoir out, Lonely Boy, Tales of a Sex Pistol. It's available now wherever you get books. This is me and an original Sex Pistol talking about music and drugs and life. You know, that stuff. What do you think of Jethro Tull?
I actually never liked him back in the day.
Right.
But I actually like him now.
It's something weird is happening to me around Jethro Tull.
You're changing too?
Well, one of the first records I had was that Aqualung record. And yeah. It wasn't bad. But, you know, what was really annoying about him was the get-up and the flute and the ridiculous dancing.
The tights.
You listen to the music, some of it rocks pretty hard.
Yeah.
So we're like, I don't know, like when I talk to people who grew up in England, I need to hear about it because, you know, I don't really know much about England in terms of, I can only learn from people. Yeah. I don't spend a lot of time there.
Yeah.
So where did you grow up?
West London.
So which, right in the city.
Yeah. When you say the city.
Yeah.
The city could mean like right where Piccadilly Circus is.
Sure.
That's like the inner
downtown.
No, that's the inner city.
Okay.
And it's all comes out, spreads out around that.
Yeah.
So there's no like downtown.
Right.
Where you head downtown.
Yeah.
And then it pushes out and I'm kind of like west of all that. A place called Hammersmith where this place called the Hammersmith Odeon. Back in the day, it was called the Hammersmith Odeon. Now it's called the Hammersmith Apollo by the Hammersmith Flyover. All the bands play there who come into town if you're at that level, like 5,000.
Yeah, yeah. Seats. I've heard of that. Yeah.
It's a famous place. Bowie's last show was there where he did his farewell to Ziggy Stardust.
Oh, really? He shedded the persona.
Yeah, and that was the one where I stole all of his equipment. So.
That's a true story.
Yeah. Well, you think I made it up?
No, I didn't think you made it up. I thought it was a rumor.
No, so, oh, man. So,
were you with the Sex Pistols already?
No. This was prior to any band. I might have been messing about with Cookie at this point, but nothing serious has happened.
Is he still around?
Yeah.
And you guys are still pals?
Oh, he's my oldest friend. I've known him since I was 10. We're still good buddies.
That's a beautiful thing, isn't it?
It is when you got a couple of pals like that.
Yeah
it's the best.
Did you go to the show, the Bowie show?
Yeah. I didn't realize that they were doing two nights.
Yeah,
you know, and I didn't realize what recording meant at right. this stage. So we watched the show, everyone's screaming, it's great, all the young girls are screaming, and it's a typical Ziggy Stardust Spiders yeah. from Mars concert.
What's this, 70 what?
72, 73,
yeah.
I believe, somewhere in there. The show ends. I know this place like the back of my hand, Hammersmith Odeon.
Why?
Because I live around the corner, and I used to get no ways to get in to see every concert. I saw Motley Hoople there. I saw Bob Marley there. I saw Queen there. I saw everybody there.
You saw them at the peak of their careers, or right before they peaked, probably.
Yeah.
Because 5,000-seater?
Yeah.
First tour stuff.
Yeah, I guess so.
In Motley Hoople, well, they started there, right? In UK, right?
Yeah.
So that must you were the glam guys. You like the glam guys?
That was my thing.
Yeah?
Roxy Music,
oh,
David Bowie, the Faces.
Bolan.
Bolan, Rod Stewart and the Faces.
Faces isn't really glam. That's good. That's a rock. It's a little folksier, right?
Yeah, it's a bit more bluesier, I suppose. Yeah. But they looked the part. They could have fitted in. Satin pants and that lovely hair that I could never get.
What a great band they were, huh?
Oh, they were fantastic.
You saw them live a few times?
Oh, all the time.
Yeah?
I was obsessed with Rod Stewart.
You were?
I really was. There was a combination.
In a good way?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
It was the voice. It was the haircut.
The hair.
And it was the songs.
Yeah.
I had all of his solo albums. And then all the Faces albums.
At some point, did Rod Stewart, did you turn on him or you stayed with him all the way through?
I didn't turn on him, but I went off him when he came to America and he got all poncy.
Poncy, that's the word.
When he was, when he kept with his, Britt Eklund, I think she punched him up a bit.
Because, like, at some point, you know, this guy had, like, one of the most unique and greatest voices in rock and roll. And then right around, I don't remember when it happened, but I think it was, like, the Blondes Have More Fun single. Or one of those, I think Atlantic Crossing. Yeah, something happened where it was just sort of like, nah,
it's done. It stopped being cool. He became a perfume punce.
Yeah, something. Yeah, it just wasn't good.
Yeah.
And the voice didn't change. Didn't like him anymore.
No, he had a different band.
Yeah,
that was trying to be the Faces, but when you're a real Faces fan like me, it wasn't the same.
All right, so you know the place. You go watch. You see Bowie.
The show ends. I hang around.
Yeah. How old are you? Like 15?
Yeah. I borrow someone's minivan. Me and another guy's dead now. We got in there about 2 a.m. There's no one in there. They got a roadie asleep in the fifth row. The house lights are on the stage.
Yeah.
So it's kind of surreal. It's so quiet in there. This guy's snoring.
Are they packing up shit?
No, everyone's gone. It's just 2 a.m.
So they're going to pick it up the next day.
They're playing tomorrow.
Oh, the day before.
They're doing 2 nights.
Got it. Oh, right? I get it. Yeah, yeah.
So all the gear's set up.
Yeah.
This guy's snoring.
Yeah.
I sneak in with my wire cutters. I proceed to go on the stage and cut all these beautiful mics. I didn't realize they were for recording.
Yeah.
These fantastic Neumann mics.
Yeah, yeah.
I get them. I take the cymbals, the drums.
Why didn't you just unplug them? What'd you cut everything for?
Because I'm an idiot. I didn't know what I was doing. You know what I mean?
Just like, you just made them useless.
Well, the wires were useless, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that's right. They're just, you can unplug the cable. Right.
Unplug them later.
Yeah, yeah.
Got the bass head. It was a Sun amp. It was a Sun set up, one of them new solid state.
Yeah.
It was a big deal back then. Still didn't know what it was.
Right.
It was the bass player's head. Loaded it all up in the minivan.
No guitars.
No guitars, but the crown jewel was Bowie's microphone.
Uh-huh.
It was this little tiny Electro Voice. You can see it because they filmed it.
Yeah.
With lipstick all on the edge of it, on the end of it.
You got it.
I got it, but I don't have it.
What happened to it?
Who knows?
He sold it.
I became a junkie. Junkies don't keep anything.
Moves around.
Someone's got it.
So that's for that was the movie Ziggy Star. That was the Ziggy movie? Full concert? That was done at Hammersmith?
Yeah.
And you got that mic?
Yeah.
Were you a junkie already?
No, I was 15. I didn't start doing dope till after the Pistols when I was 22.
So what are you when you grow up? What kind of life you living? Who are you living with? What's your folks do? What happens? How'd you become this?
I become this because I had a rotten upbringing.
Of course.
You know, the abusive stepfather.
Oh, really?
He molested me when I was 10.
Is that true?
Of course it's true. Why do you keep asking me things are true? You think I'm making this
shit
up?
No, of course not. I don't know why. Because you seem like such a solid dude.
Well, that was a long time ago.
So, like,
one time it happened.
Oh, yeah?
He made me pull his thing when my mum was in hospital.
Oh, Jesus.
Attempting, I believe, to have a baby, but she had a miscarriage. And I think it was more of a power trip. He never liked me, this guy.
Yeah.
I didn't like him.
Yeah.
But what it did was it really changed everything because I didn't want to go home anymore.
How old were you?
About 10.
Yeah.
I didn't know how to deal with this.
Yeah.
I thought I'd done something wrong. And after that time, I just completely turned into a kleptomaniac, a peeping Tom. I couldn't sit still.
Where did you leave the house? Did you move?
I stayed there till till I was about 14.
And he was also physically abusive?
Not. I had one fight with him at the end.
Oh.
But he didn't. He just used his size, which at the time it was very intimidating. He was always intimidating me.
Did you tell your mom?
I told my mum in a letter a lot later, but I got the old denial letter back saying that didn't happen. What are you talking about? Blah blah blah.
Oh really?
Yeah.
So that sent you spiraling into a life of petty crime.
Yes.
That seems to have become that became real crime.
Yeah, I mean, it was all, most of it was juvenile. I had 13 arrests as a juvenile.
Where was the real dad?
He was up, he was in Nottingham. Yeah. After he left my mum, when I don't remember, somewhere in between nowhere and one.
Yeah.
He split, he moved to Nottingham, he got married, had two boys and two girls.
So you got four half-brothers and sisters.
Yeah.
And what's that, what did he do?
He just split.
Was he? What was his job? Did you build a relationship with that guy?
I met him.
Yeah.
In 2008.
It took that long.
It took that long, and I went up. I went over to England to do a tour.
Yeah.
Like 30 shows. And
with which band?
Sex Pistols.
Yeah.
This, you know, reunion nonsense, and then in that time. My friend of mine helped me track him down. Anyway, I got on a train to Nottingham. I met him at the train station.
Yeah.
And we went into a cafe around the corner and bullshitted for a couple of hours. And that was the end of that. And then a couple of phone calls a couple of months later. And that was it. It was good to meet. It was good to see him, though.
Did you see the resemblance and everything?
Yeah, and his voice is exactly the same.
Really?
And this is really weird. I don't know if there's a connection or it's just a coincidence. He was a lorry driver.
Yeah.
A truck driver.
Yeah.
And I love to drive. I learned when I was like 13 years old.
Got a nice truck out there.
Yeah.
Yeah. What is that thing?
It's a Dodge Ram 1500.
Big car. Big car.
I almost smashed it.
Coming here?
In the rain. On my life, I had one of them moments, you know, where it all slows down.
Sure. Yeah.
In your head.
It's going
to
happen.
I'm just coming along the 118 because I came up to the 118 to the 210. I came around the top way. And it was like a scene out of Chips. You know, they always used to shoot Chips.
Yeah.
Up there, the original Chips.
Yeah.
Where you see the extras cars going like 10 miles an hour. And all of a sudden, I just must have went over a bump and I literally lost control.
Ugh.
If there was no other cars around, I would have been history. It was the weirdest thing.
Did you slide? Was it because of the rain, or was it?
It didn't
huge...
slide. It kind of went. It. What's that when it goes?
Swivels.
Like, swiveled.
Yeah.
I hit something.
Yeah.
A pothole or something.
Yeah.
It was scary, man. It got my attention.
Yeah. Woke you up.
Oh man.
Got that. It pulled you right into the present.
It really did.
Got you out of your head, Steve.
It got me out of my head, and it got me to slow down too.
So you met your old man, and you didn't really contact him after that. What about the other brothers and sisters? Ever?
No, never met them.
Not compelled?
I don't think he had any desire to open up that can of worms, which I understand.
Yeah.
I don't really want a relationship.
Sure. They probably know who you are.
Well, he's probably told them. I don't think he knew who I was originally, though.
Really? When you first met him or early on?
Early on.
Yeah.
When he split, I don't think he knew anything about my coming up in the Sex Pistols or anything.
So how does that happen? When do you start playing guitar?
I started playing guitar about 3 months after I got kind of moved over to guitar. I was singing first.
With another band?
No, with the Sex Pistols. It was Cookie.
Yeah.
Glenn Matlock, who was the original...
Bass player, yeah.
Yeah, and then Wally Nightingale, who was the original guitar player. He was ugly.
Yeah.
I was the singer originally. We did one show. It was awful.
That was you came up with the name?
No, Malcolm McLaren did.
See, like, I got to figure out how that all comes together, because who'd I talk to in here? Chrissy Hynde.
Yeah.
She was around.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally around.
And working for Malcolm?
She was working in the shop, yeah, Let It Rock.
And that was on Kings Road?
Yeah.
Now, when did that like start to turn? Because you're growing up, you're seeing Bowie, right? And I think I talked to Dolby, right? What's that guy's name?
Thomas Dolby.
Thomas Dolby, yeah. Like, because he was like running around at that time too. Like, I've talked to a couple cats from your generation, and I talked to older guys who were in Britain, like Lemmy, you know, who were, they were going to see Fleetwood Mac and the Beatles and sure. like, you know, that stuff. But Chrissy Hynde said that when Johnny Thunders and the Heartbreakers came to England,
yeah.
that changed the whole game. Is that possible?
I don't know about changed the whole game. Everyone started doing smack.
Yeah, that's when that started. So it wasn't a music thing. It was like, heroin is how you
no,
did that.
No, I'm going to give Thunders credit, man. I was a massive New York Dolls fan.
Right.
You know, their first and
second. Hell of a sound, that guitar, huh?
It was just, yeah, it was good. It was chaotic. It was like real rock and roll. And that was one of the albums that helped me learn how to play guitar. Because when I got shoved on guitar,
yeah,
I didn't really know any guitar. So we got rid of Wally. I took Wally's place. We did an audition. We got John in the band. Then it was like time to stop messing around. And how I learned to play guitar was I would take these little black beauties.
Yeah.
And that would give me the focus. Because I had that thing, you know, the ADAD.
Couldn't
focus 5 minutes.
Sure, a little speed doesn't hurt.
A little speed zooms you right in there.
Yeah.
And that really helped me.
And you locked in enough to figure out how to play those three chords or so.
Yeah, it was all the same chord. Yeah. It was a matter of moving my arm up and down the fretboard.
Yeah, yeah.
That was basically it, you know.
But what was it like, the shop, the Malcolm McLaren shop? I mean, it seems like that there was an orchestration of a scene happening.
Malcolm's shop was like the Haight Ashbury of punk.
Right.
It was like the place where everything, all the glue, everything stuck together revolved around that shop.
And what were you fighting against? What was being pushed out? What music was sort of like, well, fuck this? The changing of the guard.
Yeah, I don't think I was one of them people
who
said, fuck this.
Yeah.
I just wanted to get laid and be in a rock and roll band.
Right.
That was someone else who was saying all that.
But do you remember what music was popular at the time that, you know, people were reacting against? I mean, what wave was crashing?
Well, it was the pomp of the band Yes and...
Oh, right, the Prog.
Jethro Tull.
Yeah.
Zeppelin, if you will.
Yeah.
Unapproachable bands.
Right. Prog rock dominance.
Yeah. Steve Hillage.
Right.
I'm getting deep now.
No, it's good. Steve Hillage.
Tangerine Dream.
Yeah.
But looking back on it now, I look at them bands and I think they're kind of punk too.
A little bit.
They're not looking for any single. They don't give a shit about anybody else. They're kind of just doing their thing.
Yeah, they'll play a whole song, one side, two songs.
Yeah. They must have been doing speed too.
Doing something. So that was it. There were these like almost mythic, you know, bands around that, you know, played with, you know, mythological and Renaissance characters and little universes to create this sound, and you guys brought it back down to the people.
We brought it back down. I think a lot of it was because technical ability, you know, and a bit of anger in there.
Right.
You know, you're young. But I don't think we set out to get rid of all these old fart bands. We was just the next wave, and we just come along and came along at the right time.
Right.
And John wrote fantastic lyrics.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And the music was cool.
Now, with Malcolm, so he would just create an environment where everyone hung around.
He had his shop. It was him and Vivian Westwood.
And it was clothing mostly.
It was a clothing shop, but they had a jukebox in there. They had a couch.
Yeah.
You could hang in there.
Yeah.
You know, and he was drawn to me. I went in there way before the Pistols started, and I became friends with him. And he used to show me all these... I hung around with him. I would drive him up the West End of London.
Yeah.
Because he couldn't drive. I would drive Viv's mini van, and buy material for him to make stuff up.
So they were making all the plaid skirts and the belts and the
not
safety
at this
pins?
Point. Not no. at this point. They were just doing Teddy Boy stuff.
Okay.
Which in England is a little different. It was the same kind of music, you know, Jerry Lee Lewis.
Right.
But the look was a bit different. They had this thing, all these guys called Teddy Boys. It was called like the Edwardian looking thing where they'd have the big drape coats, drain pipes, winkle picker shoes.
Right.
Similar, but a little bit different than the States.
Yeah, there was a pretty aggressive rockabilly thing going on too, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That stuff that plays a lot into punk, I think.
Well, the second wave.
Yeah.
Like when we came up.
Yeah.
They didn't like us, the punks. They thought we were taking the piss out of them, the Teddy Boys.
Oh, the Teddy Boys didn't like you?
No.
There was a schism, a divide.
Yeah.
So McLaren takes a liking for you, driving Vivian's van around.
Driving her Mini around. In return, he took me out at night and showed me like the nightlife.
Yeah.
That I was never hip to. I was like a young guy who used to go to football matches and was
and that, steal things.
Yeah, that was my thing. And he showed me a whole nother side. He would take me to this club called the Speakeasy. He knew all the rock and rollers.
So you're like this feral working class kid.
Yeah.
That he's like, I'm gonna show this guy.
I guess so, because he's a bit off. He's a bit off too.
Yeah,
Malcolm. You know, he likes the underworld characters.
Oh yeah,
he's not into the straight people.
Were the Cray brothers around then?
Yeah, in the '60s,
oh,
early
'60s. Yeah,
I think some of it was still going on, but it wasn't. It wasn't big at that.
Wasn't
point.
Dominating the tabloids at that point.
Yeah.
So you're going around. You're seeing who. What are you doing? What are you learning?
I'm just learning another side of life, the avant-garde side of life that I was really drawn to.
The art side of life, in some way.
Just people who different, like the Andy Warhol side.
Right.
The English version of that. There was a few shops. There was another one called Granny Takes a Trip.
Yeah.
That they sold a lot of them velvet suits with the rhinestones.
Oh, yeah.
cool stuff that I went in there a bunch of times.
Did you buy stuff?
I didn't buy anything. And they were all in the back shooting dope. So you could literally walk in there and walk out. I'm like, where are these guys? There's never anyone in here. I didn't know what dope was at the time.
Yeah.
But I didn't. I just, helped myself. It was great.
What were you doing? Just drinking and taking speed?
Yeah.
So you start learning to play guitar because you got rid of the guitar player.
Yeah.
And then... Is that when and Malcolm is producing you at that point to begin with?
No.
Did he talk you into the band? Or you had the band?
We had the band.
Yeah.
Because Glenn Matlock worked in the shop on the Saturdays.
And he knew how to play bass.
He knew how to play bass. So there's another connection.
Yeah.
Because he worked in Malcolm's shop.
Okay.
And he was a bass player.
Yeah.
And he was a fan of the Faces.
Yeah.
It made it perfect sense to start a band with me, Cookie, and him, and this guy Wally.
Well, how does Paul play into all that?
Well, he was my,
You guys just hung out together?
We hung out. I stole him a drum kit.
From who? Which band?
I don't fucking know. There were so many. Set it up in his mum's bedroom.
Yeah.
And he learned how to play a little bit in there.
Yeah. No training, just listening to records.
Just crash, bang, wallop, yeah.
Yeah. And, all right, so you decided to start the band.
Yeah.
And Malcolm is, what is his role initially?
He just came to rehearsals here and there. He weren't really into it. He obviously saw that it had a long way to go. He had nothing to do with the music, by the way. I just want to get that clear from the beginning to the end. He had no input as far as songs. He was more the fashion side, and other little stunts. But he did say, he said, you got to get rid of that guy, Wally. It's not happening. And after we did the one show, I realized that I didn't want to be the singer.
Yeah.
I don't like it when everyone stares at me.
Yeah.
I'd rather be kind of people looking at you, but you're not the main focus.
Yeah, yeah.
So it kind of worked out as it was meant to be,
Yeah. How did he take it?
Wally?
Yeah.
He wasn't happy.
No.
And his dad had this rehearsal place where we used to rehearse for months for free.
Yeah.
This BBC studio. His dad had the contract to do the electrician work there.
Yeah.
And it never got done. And it was right down by Hammersmith Bridge by the river. So we could rehearse in there all day long, all night in this beautiful soundtrack.
Yeah.
Soundproof, beautiful BBC place.
Yeah, yeah. And you lost that when you got rid of Wally.
Exactly.
And then where'd you go?
It was not good for a little while. We had to like rent a van, go to some horrible damp rehearsal place, set up, fuck about for a couple of hours, take it all down in the van,
right.
Take it back, take the rental van back. It was a nightmare. And Malcolm saw an ad at the rehearsal storage place, Denmark Street, Tin Pan Alley. and it was belonged to the tour manager of the band Badfinger.
Oh yeah, sure.
And we got it, and it was right. This was right central London, Tin Pan Alley.
Yeah,
and it had an upstairs, like with a little sink, an outside toilet, and we could rehearse downstairs. So we lucked out so well.
Where was Badfinger?
They were done. Two of them committed suicide.
Right. It didn't end well, yeah.
It was done. And I lived upstairs. This is the first time I've had my own place.
Upstairs in the same building as the rehearsal space?
Yeah.
Oh, great.
Right in the center of London.
Yeah.
It was a dream come true.
Who'd you live with? Just you?
Just me.
Ah.
And whatever chick would stay over.
Yeah.
Or not even stay over. Just I preferred them to split.
Yeah. So when does Lydon come in?
He's in at this point.
Yeah. How does that happen? How do you meet him?
It was, it happened. We put an ad in a paper. He meets us down at Malcolm's shop.
Yeah.
One night. He'd been in there too, you know, randomly.
Yeah.
And he shows up. He's a bit nervous. We're nervous. We go around the corner to this pub on King's Road called the Roebuck. We have a few pints. We're getting a bit loose, and we say, well, come on in, let's go back to the shop and sing along with the jukebox. And he does that, and we pressed a number, and 18 by Alice Cooper come up.
Yeah.
And we said, go on, sing along to that. I mean, it's a bit hard. And he just fucked about, John. He didn't take it seriously, and I got annoyed with him because he wasn't trying.
Right.
But in hindsight, he did exactly the right thing.
Just doing that Johnny Rotten thing, that
18. He was just goofing around, man. Yeah. And I didn't like him for that because I thought he wasn't serious.
Yeah.
And then I noticed his teeth were all green. I said, your fucking teeth are rotten, mate. And that stuck, the name thing, stuck all that night. and that's when we started... rehearsing. That was prior to Denmark Street, Tin Pan Alley. That was a couple of months before that.
So by the time you got over there, you guys you're at it.
We're at it.
With Matlock.
We're at it. All the magic was written in that little place where I ended up living.
So when does Malcolm start suiting you up?
The clothes?
Yeah.
Well, from the bat.
Yeah.
You know, John kind of had that look prior to Malcolm.
Yeah.
I think everyone was inspired by it. And that's when Let It Rock stopped and it became Sex.
Right.
That was the name of the shop in big pink letters.
And did he change the inventory? Did the
inventory totally changed.
To what was it then?
Bondage tops, bondage pants.
Right, the collars and shit.
A lot of fascist stuff, a lot of
right.
Karl Marx stuff, shirts with Karl Marx on it.
Yeah.
Just shock value.
Yeah.
You know.
It worked, though.
Swastikas.
Sure.
All that stuff.
Was there a skinhead movement yet?
The skinhead movement, which I was in the middle of 60. The original skinheads.
Yeah.
When I was like 10 or 11.
Oh, yeah?
You know, that was the original skinheads. You had the mods, and the mods, which was the Who and all that, small faces. Kinks.
Mm-hmm.
That ended, and that's when the skinhead started. That lasted a few years, fizzled out. But then after the Sex Pistols started, this next wave, these oi bands, came around just after the Pistols. That's when it got all weird and National Front and
violent,
you know, kind of racist,
yeah,
if you will, you know.
The original skinheads weren't?
I had a lot of black friends who I went to school with. We were all skinheads. All we used to do was go to youth clubs and go to football matches.
There was no music involved?
Yeah.
Yeah? What was the music?
Blue Beat.
Yeah.
Tamla Motown. Soul.
Right.
That was the music.
Some of the ska stuff?
Yeah, not so much ska, but I guess early ska, the original Prince Buster and all that stuff.
That came in later, too, after the Pistols, right?
Yeah.
The ska resurrection.
Specials.
Right, that was when I think that was happening in 1980, 1981, right?
Yeah, Madness.
Yeah, yeah. One Step Beyond. Mm. All right, so now you've got an outfit, you've got a band that's functioning. You guys are playing out now?
After about 3 months of me playing guitar and rehearsing, we did our first show around the corner at St. Martin's Art College. It was literally around the corner. We walked around there and walked our gear around there. Glenn Matlock went to that school.
Yeah.
He got the gig.
Yeah.
And we opened up for a band called Bazooka Joe. It was no stage. It was just a room, a small room. The bass player, funny enough, was Adam Ant in Bazooka Joe.
Oh, really?
We went on. I was terrified, like I always was, when it came time to be in front of people. So I took a couple of mandrakes.
Yeah.
American.
Quaalude.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And best drug ever.
That's what I hear.
Oh, tingly feelings. We have a couple of pints, and we got on stage. We started doing Did You Know Wrong, and I look over at Rotten. I'm like, this is the best fucking thing ever.
Yeah.
You just had that moment, you know, yeah, where it all seemed to gel.
Yeah.
And it's like coke. You search for that moment forever after, and it never right. is.
That know? First one.
Yeah. So that was it, and the plug got pulled after about 3 songs.
Really?
Because we were very loud.
Yeah.
We just didn't know.
Yeah.
We just didn't know what we were doing.
What was the song list?
Few covers. No Lip. Don't Give Me No Lip. It's a Dave Berry song.
Yeah.
I think we did a Small Faces song. Did You Know Wrong was an original.
Yeah.
I don't think there was a lot of originals at that stage of the game.
Yeah.
You know.
Right.
We used to do a lot of covers.
Did you do Roadrunner then?
No, that came a little bit later.
It's a good song.
You know what? That album is fantastic.
Which one? The Modern Lovers album?
Yeah.
It's great.
I didn't realize that came out way before
yeah.
anything came out.
It was, what was it,
1972,
yeah. Oh, it's great. The I love Old World and Astral Plane.
Yeah.
And, She Cracked.
Yeah.
She's
Cracked is fantastic.
It's great. Yeah, he was a special guy, that guy.
Pablo Picasso.
Was never called an asshole.
Yeah.
Not in New York.
Yeah. that was a great album. I'm glad we did a version of that. We play it when we play it live. We always do that song.
Roadrunner?
Yeah.
All right, so you had that magic moment, and then you get unplugged, and then how does it become a phenomenon? What happens? How does Matlock go away and Sid come in?
Well, that was a while after that.
About, so you guys played a lot around town.
We played a lot up north of England, various places, strip clubs, avant-garde kind of art parties.
Is the metal thing happening now too? Is Lemmy doing that yet?
I'm not sure. It could have been still Hawkwind at this point.
Okay, yeah.
I'm not sure of the dates. I mean, I knew Lemmy.
Yeah.
I used to buy a speed off him down Portobello
Sounds
Road.
Sounds like he was the guy with the speed.
He was the man to go to.
Yeah.
He was the man to go to. I love Lemmy, man.
Yeah.
I love him.
I think we did one of his last interviews in here.
Yeah?
Yeah. He didn't look well, but it was sweet. It was good. I'm glad I got to talk to him.
Yeah, it was. He looked. We played his 70th birthday party at the Whiskey.
Yeah,
and I saw him, and God, he really looked like death warmed up.
Yeah, with the cane,
the face. I mean,
yeah,
such a shame. I mean, it could have been avoided. That
yes, it would have taken a little work.
You know, he changed Jack Daniels
to beer,
to right. vodka,
oh,
and orange juice, because orange juice is healthy.
Yeah.
You know, that's his thinking.
All right, so you're playing around, you're doing all the places, you're getting your chops in order, and then how does it evolve? Is Chrissy Hynde around?
She's around.
She's hanging out, right?
She's hanging out. I was hanging out.
Yeah.
Hanging out the back of her.
Yeah?
Yeah.
She seemed like, when I talked to her, it was very intimidating.
She's great, Chrissy. She's a true rock and roller.
Yeah, she really is, man.
Yeah. Her story's pretty amazing.
Paid her dues.
I love her, man. And she used to come over Denmark Street and stay over at night.
Yeah.
We used to have a little thing going.
Yeah.
And I was always like, she goes, I want to be in a band. I'm like, shut up. Talk about being a band. Get down here. But she proved everybody wrong. Fair play to her.
Are you friends with her still?
Yeah. She did the foreword for my book.
Oh, good. Yeah. Oh, good. All right, so you're playing around.
We're playing around.
I'm just
around.
Trying to figure out when you take over the world for the year or two that you did.
We play around. We start getting popular a little bit on the music front. We're playing up and down England.
And you're doing avant-garde places, like art rock places?
Only a few in London.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the shows we did up north were pretty brutal.
Yeah,
went men's working men's clubs, Tashes, Flares, Big Fusier, throwing shit at us.
Yeah,
you know that was the. But yeah, in there, there's always be a couple of kids who would like be gravitated
lock
to it.
In.
And the next day they'd cut their hair, put plastic bags on themselves, you know.
Yeah.
And that kind of went along. We got a record deal with EMI.
Sure.
We cut Anarchy when we were with EMI. We start rehearsing to do a tour. We were the headlines, Clash, The Damned, and Johnny Thunders and The Heartbreakers. We're rehearsing at this place in Kilburn. A limousine pulls up. You're going down to the Today Show. Queen can't make it. We were label mates. We're like, all right. So we all get in the limo. We go down to the... There's two channels on TV at this point.
Yeah.
Thames Television and BBC. I believe so. This is a big show. It's 6 o'clock. Everyone watches it. They're eating their bangers of mash and drinking tea. Everyone watches this. Everyone. Yeah. We go in there. We get put in a green room. I start downing a couple of bottles of Blue Nun because I'm getting nervous again because I'm not going to be on TV.
Shitty white wine.
The worst, but yeah. it tasted good.
Yeah.
It was sweet. We seemed like we were in the green room forever. Okay, time to go. We go marching out. Susie and the band, Susie's with us. She's a fan, that Bromley contingent.
Yeah.
So they're standing with a few other fans behind the band. We're sitting down. He starts asking the questions. He's got no interest in us at all.
Yeah.
He immediately don't like us.
He wanted Queen to be there.
He did.
Yeah.
And he probably didn't even want Queen there. He was such an old fart, you know, one of them old farts.
Yeah.
And he immediately took a disliking to us. And so he's trying to provoke us. He was asking, what did we do with the money? Blah, 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 blah. And finally, started swearing. And he said something to Susie. She said, I've always wanted to meet you, Bill Grundy. She goes, oh, okay, then we'll meet after the show then, yes? Being like all them blokes were.
Yeah.
We're probably fucking all kind of young birds.
Yeah.
You know, and I let him have it. I called him a dirty fucker, a dirty bastard. He goes, carry on, carry on. I said, what a fuck? No one, as far as I know, had any idea this shit was going out live. But it did. And that's when it all changed. That next day, it went from getting a few fans, being in the NME, the Melody Maker, music magazines, yeah. to front page, every front page, till the day we kind of broke up. But that was the end of it too. That kind of was the beginning of the end.
So it goes out. Can you see this on YouTube? I imagine can. Yeah.
Looks pretty tame now. But right. at the time, it was a big deal. No one ever swore on TV.
Sure. So now you've launched.
We're there. We've hit the big time.
And punk rock becomes a thing.
Becomes the thing. It's all go.
Did you do the show with the Heartbreakers and everybody?
We did, but a lot of the shows got cancelled because of that. Because the publicity, you know, we were these devils.
Yeah.
A lot of these places where we were going to play, people would protest.
Oh, really?
The council would come out in droves. We're not having them playing in our city. So out of about the 12, I don't even remember how many shows there was originally. We did about 3.
Yeah. And were you doing dope yet?
No, I experimented once, but I wasn't into it at this point.
Yeah.
But I was around the Heartbreakers guys, and man, they made up for me not doing it, I'll tell you that.
All right, so how does it change? So you all those shows get canceled. Now you're at war with city councils, with the proper people of Britain. There's a, you know, there's a war going on between punk rock and the normal people.
Yeah.
And what's Malcolm doing now?
Well, Malcolm shit himself the night of the Bill Grundy show.
Yeah.
Shit himself until he saw the papers the next day. Then he's like, "What? Look, let me show you what I invented." You know, he tried to take credit for it all.
For everything.
For that.
Yeah.
Yeah, for everything. Oh, he always does. You know, he always does.
Is he still alive?
No, he died a few years back. But, you know, I always have a soft spot for Malcolm, even though he didn't really take care of business as far as any money that we made. But I still like him. But he was a big part of the Sex Pistols, regardless what anyone says.
Yeah.
But he wasn't everything. We wasn't a boy band with him pulling the strings by any means.
No, it doesn't sound like it. It sounds like you guys were kicking at it and doing the work.
Yeah.
And going out. So how do you sustain yourself if, you know, you're getting all this resistance? How do you get gigs? How does it start to happen?
Well, a part of that whole thing of being banned everywhere, it was all part of the mystique. And you know, you couldn't buy that bloody publicity we were getting.
Yeah.
But for me, I just want the most best time for me in the Sex Pistols realm was doing Nevermind the Bollocks.
Yeah.
Was recording Nevermind the Bollocks. That was the happiest for me. It wasn't the shows or all the rest of it. So that was what I was really into. And then after the Grundy thing, after Glenn gets the boot, after Sid gets in the band who couldn't play, everything's kind of shifting.
But when did you record? That was who played on that?
I played all the bass.
You played all the bass.
Pretty much.
Guitar sounds great on that record. It's weird. You go, you know, you listen to, you know, I got, you're a Les Paul guy, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a great sound. And, you know, when you go back, I remember when it came out because it was 70, what was it, 5, 75?
76, 77.
Was it 77?
77, I think the album came out.
Because I remember when it came to the States, because I was like 13, 14 years old.
Yeah.
And it wasn't my bag, but I bought it immediately and I had it. And I, you know, I listened to it and I couldn't wrap my brain around it when I was at that age. But later I played it and I'm like, you know, this isn't crazy. This is just rock and roll music.
Just rock and roll.
That's right. Because, you know, when the whole press of the Pistols and, you know, the way he sings in particular, but the root of it, it's just fucking rock.
Yeah.
It's not like crazy.
No.
So you go in there and you record that and you do the bass because Matlock's out?
Matlock's already gone. Matlock played on Anarchy.
Yeah.
Because he was still in the band when we did the single.
Yeah.
But after we did that single and he got the boot.
Why did he get the boot?
Circumstances. He didn't look the part. He was a bit clean.
Yeah.
His mum didn't like the song Anarchy in the UK. It was a combination of things.
He's still around though, right?
He's still around.
Friends?
Yeah, you know.
Yeah.
He's suing us right now.
Really?
I think so.
For what?
You know, once more.
Oh, yeah. From that record.
It's some people, though, no matter what you give them, they'll always want more.
Man, but how much is there at this point?
Nothing. We did one bleeding album. There's nothing.
It's weird how that happens later. It's like, you know, like people are like, they get a grudge turns into like, well, I got nothing.
Yeah.
I want some of that back.
Yeah.
So, okay, so recording was fun.
I love the recording process. We got a good producer, Chris Thomas, and Bill Price, the engineer. Chris Thomas did a lot of records. I wanted him in the band because he did early Roxy Music records. And he was like a proper producer.
Yeah.
A lot of punk bands back in the day would get all kinds of clowns to produce them.
Right.
Like we did originally. We had our sound guy for live shows started out with him.
Yeah.
And he lost it. He just smoked so much weed, and all of a sudden, he lost it. Some people ain't meant for success.
Yeah.
And his ego went out of control. So we attempted doing Anarchy with him originally, and he made us play the backing track like 100 times, and it was never enough. It was never right. It was perfect the second time.
And he kept going.
He was just out of his mind. You're gone.
Yeah.
We went in there, a proper studio, second cut. Okay, that's done. Come in here, let's do some overdubs. John, let's do some vocals, let's do some bits and bobs. It was done in like, you know, a few days. Fantastic.
Anarchy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then Matlock goes, Sid joins the band. Sid's in hospital when we're doing a record, a godsend, because he wanted to play on it.
Why was he in the hospital?
He had like jaundice or something, hepatitis.
How'd you meet that guy?
He was friends with John.
Yeah.
Another one who used to go in the shop.
Yeah.
He was around. He used to come to the early shows.
Yeah. Was he a... what kind of guy was he?
I liked Sid.
Yeah.
I thought he was a good lad. You know?
Yeah.
He was a classic juvenile delinquent.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But not crazy. You know, he was going to all the Bowie stuff. He had his hair like Bowie.
Yeah.
When he was 14, 15. He was younger. He was 19. And when I was like 22, he was 19, so he's younger.
But he didn't play any instrument?
No.
No.
Got slung in the deep end. I had to kind of tell him where to put his fingers, which is the last thing I want to be doing.
And the reason you took him on was because he looked good.
He looked good, and I think John liked him because he was his buddy.
Yeah.
Then all of a sudden, John's got a buddy because it was always me and Cookie.
Yeah.
And we'd always fuck off after we rehearsed or did shows.
Right.
And I think John resented that. He didn't have his buddy.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
He didn't want to hang out with Matlock. So that kind of was good, and they both looked fantastic on stage.
Yeah.
They really did.
Yeah.
They looked the part. I got pushed back. You know, I got put in the shadows, which I kind of got a resentment against.
Yeah.
You know. But
so after the record's out, where do you tour? When do you come to the States for the first time?
Not long after that. I think we did a couple of shows with Sid. I don't know, 10 something.
Just 10 shows with Sid after the record's out.
I believe
live.
So. Not much.
And how's performing live? Are you guys tight?
No. He can't fucking play. You know, in his respect, he was trying to play. He had his bass up here.
Yeah.
Like where your normal right. bass play. Something where if you're going to play bass,
yeah.
have it up a bit higher if you're learning, you know.
Yeah.
And he attempted it. He attempted it, and it lasted a little bit. But when we came to the States, it just all fell apart. He had the bass down low. Thought it was a guitar. He would like strum it, thinking, bass has to keep pumping
yeah.
to make it work.
Yeah.
So it was just, this was another element in my head that I went in my head like, this is getting worse and worse and worse and worse.
When you get to the States?
Yeah.
When's everybody start getting doped up?
Well, Sid's already doing that.
Yeah.
With that Bird Nancy, yeah. He was the only one doing smack.
In England?
Yeah.
Okay.
He showed up one show at a sound check with her. And we're like, who's this? Who's this bird?
Yeah, yeah. She was in Britain. She was there?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
She'd
hanging
come
out.
Over.
Yeah.
She was looking for a rock star.
Yeah. Trouble.
Yeah.
Yeah. So she got him. Got him hooked?
He was the sucker, yeah.
Yeah.
So well, she got him hooked. She got him in with the smack thing, I think.
And when do you get it involved?
After the Pistols broke up.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You come here. How many dates you do? You do New York. You go across country. I remember seeing magazine articles. You guys did. You did a little tour, right?
Yeah, but we did weird places.
Right.
Like Texas and Tulsa.
Yeah.
Not your normal places.
Why is that?
It was a stunt from McLaren.
Oh, yeah.
Which, rightly so, it was a good one. Not doing all the normal gigs that every other rock and roll band came over.
So are you getting hated everywhere?
Yeah. By cowboys and... it was a circus.
Yeah.
No one was really coming to see anything.
Yeah.
It was a circus. It was out of control at this point.
Really?
Really.
Like
really
how
out
so?
Of control.
How so?
Well, when we landed in New York,
yeah,
we were greeted by like 50 people, some Vietnam vets who was meant to be looking after us, High Times magazine,
yeah,
this magazine, that magazine, New York Times,
yeah,
blah, blah, blah. And they were all looking for the exclusive, you know. One time when we were on the road, I don't know where it was, but High Times convinced Sid to come into a hotel room and film him shooting up. You know, and they almost got it if it wasn't through one of these vet guys who crashed in the door and smashed up the camera.
Really?
Yeah.
Protecting
See, we were on thin ice anyway.
Yeah.
I think Warner Brothers had to guarantee that there'd be no problems, because we got turned down originally with My Visa, and I think Cookie had a criminal record. They didn't want us in the States.
Yeah.
But I think they had to get a guarantee from Warner Brothers.
So you left EMI?
EMI was over before we went to America. We went to A&M, which lasted a week, and they kicked us off, and then we ended up with Virgin.
Yeah.
Richard Branson's.
Yeah. So the whole thing was a clusterfuck disaster.
Yeah.
That tour.
Yeah.
And you go back to Britain, and what happened?
I didn't go back to Britain.
You stayed here.
We broke up in San Francisco. I said, I'm fucking done. We were meant to go to Brazil after...
That would have killed you. That would have been the end of it.
Yeah, and we were meant to go there, and yeah. Ronnie Biggs, the great train robber, was going to open up with us, tell poetry.
Yeah.
So I said, I've had enough... Cookie came with me and Malcolm came with me. We went to Brazil and was continuing to do the Rock and Roll Swindle movie.
That was in production?
That was kind of in production, yeah. John didn't want nothing to do with it.
Why?
Because he didn't like the concept of it.
What was the concept?
The concept of it was to make Malcolm McLaren look like he invented everything. So John and Malcolm always butted heads.
Yeah.
Always butted heads. But I was more closer to Malcolm. So that decision was easier for me, and it sounded like a good idea to go to Brazil.
Yeah,
just me and Cookie without the other two.
And they have fun? Did you have fun?
I had a great time. I was there for like 2 months, doing real blow.
Yeah, that's what you remember.
Real blow, man. This was like 78. It was so good.
Yeah. And you're shooting a movie?
Yeah, we did. Yeah, it was like a real shoestring budget.
Yeah,
but it was fun.
I don't remember ever seeing the whole movie.
Yeah, it's a mishmash. It don't make no sense. It's kind of culty.
I remember seeing, well, you know, Sid's My Way is on that, right? It's in that, right?
Yeah. Then I go back to England.
Yeah.
And then that's when it hit me. And we're still filming some of the Rock and Roll Swindle. It was over a few months. That's when I started getting into dope. That's when I started getting to dope. That's when it started getting very dark and horrible. I sold everything.
You were broke?
Broke. Not a businessman.
Yeah.
You know, I just wanted to escape through dope. That was it.
No music?
I couldn't care less. We formed the band somewhere in there, the Professionals. Yeah. Me and Cookie.
Was he strung out too?
No. Cookie was a sensible one.
Yeah.
So we did that. We wrote a bunch of songs, but my heart weren't in it. My heart was just into getting high.
Yeah.
Music. Anything else was secondary. We went on the road a couple of times across the States.
Yeah.
But it was just one big mess.
Yeah.
I liked it because I liked the guys in the band.
Yeah.
But my head was just not in the right place.
Because you're strung out.
Yeah.
And you're like going like on tour and trying to find dope and doing that whole thing?
That whole thing. Drunk all the time. Blow. Oh,
God.
Grim.
And how long did that go on for? A
couple of years.
So like when did you like stay stateside?
Well, when I went to that hotel, our last night at the Uruguay Hotel.
Yeah.
I said, I'll see you later.
Yeah.
And I didn't go back to England for 12 years. I sold my passport.
You sold your passport?
Yeah, not for much.
You can do that?
I guess so. I did.
To a guy that looked like you? How does that work?
No, just sold it as a fan.
Oh, a fan. Okay, I get it.
Now it makes sense.
Yeah.
To whoever, you know. I didn't want to never go back. That's why I sold it.
So when do you do the first solo album?
Oh, that's when I got sober.
So you didn't stay with the dope the whole time?
Once you
got here... You weren't doing nothing?
The first year I did dope in New York City. I stayed in New York for a year. Formed this other band came about, Checkered Past.
Yeah.
With Michael DeBars, Tony Sales, Clem Burke, and Nigel Harrison from Blondie.
No Hunt?
No Hunt.
I like Hunt.
He's a great drummer.
He's great.
And he's funny. So that band starts in New York. We did some, this is like around 82, 83. We did a showcase at Peppermint Lounge in New York. I'm a mess, but I heard money.
Yeah.
From this showcase. This is when there was money around.
Yeah.
We did it. Everyone liked the show. Oh, let's start a band. Okay, it's based in L.A. So we kind of all drifted out to L.A. I was a mess. I went to some private doctor who gave me this methadone thing.
Yeah.
I got off it, but then I was still drinking and doing blow and all the rest of it.
But you got off dope.
I got off the dope for a bit. This band got a deal with EMI. I started living with Michael DeBars and his wife, Pamela DeBars.
Yeah.
The band did a record, did a few shows, folded. I got back into dope.
Here?
In L.A.
That shitty black tar dope?
The balloons, downtown.
Yeah.
This went on until I run into a lady. I was homeless at this point.
What year are we looking at?
83, 84. Yeah. I'd fucked everyone over.
Yeah.
I was couch surfing. And I ran into a lady on Sunset Boulevard where the Guitar Center is. They used to be one of my places that I go, 12-step program.
Yeah.
And she said, look, She'd gotten straight. She said, if you sleep on, you can sleep on my couch, but you have to go to the meetings. And I said, okay.
Yeah.
And I did that and got sober. Didn't get it at this point.
83?
This went on for about another 6 years before the
coin. In and out?
In and out, before the coin actually dropped.
Really?
Yeah.
What did you get, a year here, 6 months here, what?
All that, yeah. Plus, when I, you know, I hadn't had sex in like 6 years. I don't know if you've ever done dope, but you're not sexual driven. It just stops.
Yeah.
You know, you don't even masturbate.
Yeah.
So after 6 years, I'm getting sober. I'm off the dope. I'm an animal, you know, and all I want to do is to get laid.
Yeah.
And I go to my meetings and I'm steaming into everyone. My addiction went from there
to
sex.
Yeah.
And I never really got the step thing at this point. I just wanted attention from chicks. I was working out. I was getting all in shape.
I remember you were kind of ripped.
I was ripped. I looked like Fabio.
Yeah.
With the long hair.
Curly hair. Metal guy.
Flowing hair. But that was the best time. I actually did a record that was kind of a metal record.
Yeah.
Just to get laid.
That was the Mercy record?
The next one, Fire and Gasoline, when I really went for it.
Yeah. I always wondered what that transition was. I didn't know how you got from the Pistols to there, but now I know. It was for pussy.
It was basically for pussy, but it was also me getting straight for the first time and wanting nothing to do with punk.
Yeah. Were you hanging out at the Roxy and shit?
The Rainbow.
The Rainbow, yeah, the Rainbow.
Rainbow.
Yeah,
and the Roxy.
Rainbow had the good Italian food, right?
I don't know. Everyone says it's the best chicken soup. I think that's... I don't know. I'll tell you, my date is October 28th, 1990. That's when it all turned around. I started making dough at this point. I had my own place that I was renting up in the hills.
For music you were making, Brad?
Yeah, from the two solo albums, working with Iggy Pop.
Did you love
Andy
Iggy?
Taylor.
Yeah.
Made a lot of money from that.
With who? Andy Taylor?
The guitar player from Duran Duran.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I was doing okay.
What'd you do with Iggy?
I wrote three songs on Blah Blah Blah.
Oh, good. That was a big record.
Yeah. I was really bummed that I couldn't play on it, but they did it in Switzerland and I didn't have any papers.
Yeah.
In all. I was really bummed. I would love to have done that with David Bowie producing.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the second album, an album called Instinct.
Yeah.
Did that in New York with Bill Laswell and I played all the guitar and that. Again, co-wrote 3 or 4 songs.
Oh, really? So you had a real relationship with James.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was great. He's great. I relapse again.
On dope?
Yeah. Take Some Bird prisoner. We're shooting dope with one big horse needle. The only time I go out is to get a Caesar salad and ice cream. And this went on for about 2 weeks. And everyone knows me.
In the room.
Anyone who works, manager, friends, when I go missing, they know I'm getting loaded.
Right.
Because I'm one of them. I don't go around people making out I'm sober when I'm high.
Yeah.
I disappear. So they knew. And I was convincing myself on one of these that I was going to get sober again. I was going to self-medicate myself with some painkillers and Quaaludes.
Yeah.
And go back to the meetings and no one would know.
Right.
That lasted about 10 minutes. And I said, fucking holy fuck, I'm done. You know?
Yeah.
It was a moment.
When you made that plan and you realized
it. Was a moment. And I surrendered. I absolutely surrendered. And now I know that feeling of like, that was my bottom. That was it.
Yeah.
Because after that, I just turned it all around. I got involved. I got a sponsor. He said, jump. I said, how high? It was all, I mean, I was still fucking chicks.
Yeah.
But I was doing the business.
Yeah.
In the rooms as well. You know?
Working the shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was it. And here I am 26 years later.
Surviving. And you look well. You look relatively healthy.
Yeah. I got to, food is the last frontier. You know, and diabetes.
You got the diabetes?
I do.
Mm.
But I'm turning it around. I've been dieting for, not dieting, but watching what I'm eating for the last 2 months.
And now, like, what happens, like, after all this time? Because, you know, how did your relationship with Lydon hold up?
Oh, we don't have a relationship.
You don't at all?
No, he lives, you know, not far. He lives down in Venice.
Yeah.
And there is no relationship.
That just ended badly and that was it?
Well, the last time I think I saw him was in 2008. The same time when I saw my real dad, we did 30 shows in Europe, Russia, Japan, 30.
Who was the lineup? It was you and Lydon and Cook?
And the original bass player.
Matlock?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Any time we've done reunions, it's been the original four.
And are they good? Do you like them?
Do you like
the tour? I mean, do you guys play well together still?
It has been good. There's moments.
Yeah.
But by the end of it, I just want to kill myself. You know? And yeah. It's a shame.
Yeah.
Because we should be over all that shit. All that stuff.
Yeah.
But, you know, some of us can't let go of resentments.
Yeah. You have?
Some of us can't let go of resentments.
Hey, you know, it's progress, not perfection.
If we were getting Rolling Stones money,
yeah,
we'd be doing it.
Right.
But at the end of the day, a way up, was that worth it?
Yeah.
For my well-being, and it ain't.
Yeah. And you do this great radio show.
Yeah.
Is that every day?
5 days a week.
You love it?
You came on there.
I did. We played some messy guitar. It was fun.
I enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was fun, man. And people love that show. It's hard to have a mainstream terrestrial radio show that people still love.
I don't think there's many.
No.
I get to play what I want, say what I want, have who I want on. And it's great.
Yeah.
Do you, because, you know, I think basically terrestrial radio, I think a lot of people just want to hear some noise in the background. But there is a percentage of true music fans who love music,
yeah,
who gravitate to my show because they know they're going to get some good shit.
An eclectic mix. You and Rollins. Rollins does a show on NPR where he plays shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's good, you know, because, you know, it's a, you know, you hear new stuff or you hear shit you haven't heard in a while, but it's like it's driven by your personality and your taste. Who are your bands now? Who do you play a lot on the show? Like, well, what do you go back to?
I play new stuff. There's some new bands that I like playing.
Yeah.
That's another thing I get the opportunity to do, play some new bands. But I go deep. I play Jethro Tull.
Yeah.
You know, I play some prog.
Yeah.
I play Free.
Yeah, oh, Free, yeah, sure.
You know, deep cuts.
Yeah,
whatever, Roxy Music, sure. Bowie.
Yeah.
New York Dolls, which is insane for KLOS.
Yeah.
But I've been doing it for so long, it's almost like normal now.
Yeah.
People expect it.
Do you do a lot of interviews on your show? I know I came on. Do you have people on?
Yeah, loads.
Yeah. Did you ever meet Bowie and talk to him?
Yeah. I actually, I did. I met him a couple of times.
Did you make an amends for the thief?
I made amends over the phone, I believe.
You did?
But I had the original drummer came on my show 6 months ago with Tony Visconti.
The producer, yeah.
They were doing this Holy Holy tour.
Uh-huh.
It was that one album that Visconti produced. I don't know. They were going
around. Bowie record.
It was a Bowie record. I don't know why it was called Holy Holy. I'm just having a blank moment. But anyway, the drummer came on, and I owed him an amends for the cymbals that I stole off him.
That at the Hammersmith?
At the Hammersmith Odeon.
Did he remember?
Well, I said, now I'm thinking, now I'm looking at him, I'm thinking, should I do this live or say off air?
Yeah.
How's he going to react?
Yeah.
And I thought, fuck it, I'll just do it, wait till we're on the air. And I said, Woody, I owe you amends. He said, you do? He said, I said, I stole your cymbals from Hammersmith Odeon. He goes, oh, really? I said, yes. I don't know if I don't know how he could not know.
Yeah.
When your cymbals disappear,
yeah,
you have to replace them.
Yeah.
Someone must have told him.
Yeah.
You know.
Your cymbals are gone.
And so I said, what can I do to make it right?
He didn't remember though?
He said he didn't.
Yeah.
He said, I said, let me give you some money. He said, how much you want? He said, give me $100. I said, here's $200. And he took the $200. He was over the moon. And I was glad. I felt good making amends.
It's a load off.
And then he put that in his book.
He did?
He had a book that came out 2 weeks later. He must have rushed that one thing in there and put it in the book. And then I went and saw him at the gig at the Wilton that night. He's a fantastic drummer, man.
Yeah.
Woody Woodmansey kicks ass.
He played with Bowie on what? Which ones? He must have been with him a long time.
Ziggy Stardust. Aladdin Sane.
Wow.
That guy is better than ever.
I just got that Bowie at the BBC box.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
To hear that band stripped down.
Yeah.
No tricks.
No
all
tricks.
All those bands through all those years.
They're like one of them bands like Free.
Yeah.
Where they're all putting their 25 cents in. There's no weak link.
Yeah.
That's what Ziggy, that's what the Spiders from Mars were like. Great bass player.
Yeah.
The drummer. And Mick Ronson, of course, who's my man.
Yeah.
He's my number one.
He's a Gibson guy.
He's my man.
He's still around?
No, he died of cancer. Oh. But he not only was a great guitar player, he was classically trained. So like on Transformer, Lou Reed,
oh, yeah,
all that stuff, that's him. And that's him on the Bowie records. All that stuff.
Yeah.
Weird chord changes.
Yeah,
and that.
Yeah.
And he's a great guitar player.
Was he a good guy?
Fantastic guy, sweetheart.
Yeah.
That was his problem.
Yeah.
No one knew who he was because he was so sweet. He didn't stand up for himself. You know.
All right, man. It was great talking to you, buddy.
When's this going to be up?
Not too long.
Do you play music?
No. I noodle around on the guitar after sometimes by myself.
You don't have to pay for that.
I don't have to pay for it. And like, I just got in the habit of it. We have a theme song, but like now that I've been noodling, my producer is cutting that up and uses it in between things. Now.
Yeah.
Just me on these. See, they send me, I get some Earthquaker sends me these pedals.
Yeah.
So I fuck around on a guitar or two.
You're getting some free shit.
I get free shit.
That means you're doing all right.
That's the best thing about it.
Yeah.
The free shit.
Yeah.
Records, pedals.
I'm just getting a mountain bike for nothing.
Really?
Yeah.
It's time. Like a motorcycle or a pedal bike?
No, a pedal.
Good. Well, I'm saying you were trying to get in shape.
It's a good one, too. Carbon fiber.
Are you going to use it?
Probably not.
Yeah, man, that's what. Take the bike I got sitting out there when I had a big idea.
Yeah. It's like a Soloflex. Remember them things?
Yeah, I got to get one of those.
I fucking had one. All it did was collect dust and I'd fuck chicks on it.
At least you got a little exercise.
Yeah, 5 minutes worth.
Thanks, Steve.
All right, buddy.
All right, people, that was the lovely Steve Jones. Hope you enjoyed that. Don't forget, go to WTFpod.com/tour for my tour dates. Or just go there and do it for the podcast. Get on the mailing list. Buy a poster. Do what you have to do. I'm going to enjoy my last couple days in Hawaii now. Okay? Boomer lives! Hey folks, this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. You know all those times you've heard guests sneeze on the show? Well, actually, you don't hear any of that because we cut the sneezes out when we're editing. But take my word for it, people definitely sneeze in here, and when they do, I've got a box of Kleenex on the table right in front of them so they can use one and get right back to business. And here's what Kleenex means to me. A tissue that will hold up. We've all used those other tissues that you blow holes right through. When I see Kleenex, I know that tissue is up for the job. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.